Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi, good.
It's 10 o'clock. Looks like meeting is canceled.
What's the standard amount of time you're supposed to wait? Isn't it at least 10 minutes? Five
Usually wait
minutes?
about 5 minutes.
Five. Well.
Just because everyone's usually running late. And usually at about 5 minutes, I'm like, yeah, if there's no one here, then no one's showing up.
Well, everybody's showing up. Sorry.
So in Denmark, there was this academic quarter. So in so at Copenhagen's university, so it was 15 minutes. And yeah, if the teacher had not shown up in 15 minutes, then then the whole auditorium left.
I was kind of wondering what the opposite was. Like, if the instructor showed up but no student showed up, when does the instructor decide to leave? As a person who taught for 4 years, I can tell you it's a lot sooner than you probably think. I would be out of there quick, because I didn't know it was. I used to do the AV work for one of the large auditoriums, and there would be some days where it would be packed, which was usually about 200, maybe 300 students, which I can't imagine teaching that many students at once. And then, like the week right before the holidays or so, there'd be like five people sitting in the auditorium. So I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're probably a whole crew here. We got a pretty full agenda too, so let's just dive in. Get my screen share. Sorry, I'm trying to get all these windows situated. Can y'all see Confluence? Well, welcome everybody to our December 11th Product Council meeting. I not quite the last one of 2025, but we're getting close. Looks like we have Alexis volunteered to take notes. Are you still good to do that, Alexis? Thank you so much. And as far as announcements goes, we had nothing in there, but I did some just poking around on Slack, and it looks like it's been announced that the critical service patch 9 for Ramsons has been delayed. I think it was supposed to come out on December 1st, and it's been pushed to January 14th. So, I don't know if any of you guys are on Ramsons, but that is something to take note of. Any other announcements that anyone is aware of that I didn't happen to find while trolling Slack? Okay. Well, let's move into liaison updates. Alexis, do you have yeah, it looks like you got some stuff here from the CC. Would you mind maybe going over
Yeah,
that a little bit?
sure. So it was a short meeting. I think we only met for half an hour, but a lot of just following up on continuing to follow up on stuff from previous meetings, Wolfcon and the summit. One thing I wanted to sort of remind us about was the create a list of folio modules with maintenance status, including orphaned apps that we said that we would do. Which I think we were, was that we, there was some talk about the survey, or I feel like we were talking about a survey, and then I just wasn't sure where we were with that. So I said I would check in. But they are expecting us to give updates on that and the thing about the DIP, which I know the DIP is in, working on the DIP process is the purview of the working group, so that's fine. But there's going to be a tri-council meeting. I volunteered our time slot on January 22nd to have the tri-council meeting, and they're going to expect an update then.
Okay, we at least when it comes to the DIP process, we do hope to have something in front of the CC and the TC before our February deadline to have a minimally viable DIP completed. So I think probably around the time of the Tri-Council, I'd have to look at the dates we selected yesterday, but the CC should have already seen the at least a draft of the minimally viable DIP process. So, but we do need to get the orphaned apps topic on the calendar to make sure that we're making some progress on that. So I will add that to the topic calendar.
Okay.
We have a definition of orphaned apps. What is it?
That's a good question.
That's probably the first thing we should talk about.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, so okay, so that's so and then there was also oh, so the most of so there were those that there was a list of 14 ideas for improving membership incentive for membership, and one of them was get your development priority sort of bumped up, and I was like, that's problematic, and they're like, you're right, but we so it was the idea is that like that has to be tied to the DIP process. There has to be community that has to come from the community. We're not expecting vendors or anybody else or to you know we're not going to be forcing anybody else to do any particular, we can't force anybody else to prioritize certain development, but if there is community funding or and a process to do it, then that seems a lot more likely. So that those things are tied together was the conclusion on that. And then the idea that came out of the DC summit from the spring was that the line item, so contributions from non-Folio members could come through the vendors, and everyone thought that was a great idea, but now it's maybe IBSCO's having a little bit of trouble kind of figuring out how to make it work. So I believe Paul and Tom were going to meet with somebody from IBSCO and try to figure out whether or not that was even feasible at this point, and they should hopefully know that within the next, maybe by the end of the year, if not early in the new year.
The rumors I'm hearing is that it doesn't look hopeful, but we'll see.
It didn't sound great, which is a huge bummer. And then, as I said, Tri-Council, I offered up our January 22nd time slot for the Tri-Council.
Okay.
That's all.
I think I can picture it now. We should like the Google search results on the community priorities page, we should have sponsored priorities up at the top. I think just a little. All right, Todd, the TC. Oh, Todd's not with us today. I can read these out. Delay in Trillium and Umbrella Leaf run into spring boot support windows similar to Sunflower. Wonderful. TC inviting RMS to discuss an upcoming on an upcoming Wednesday. So yeah, it sounds like some shifting around might need to happen with that. Security team, Folio is not affected by the React 2 shell exploit. That's great news. This is a big one. I attended this meeting yesterday. So an integral piece of the Eureka platform is the Kong Gateway, which has had some pretty major changes around their support for open source. Their open source version of Kong. And so it's been determined that the project needs to pivot away from using the Kong Gateway. And several different options were investigated. And API 6, which is an open source Apache product, was a pretty clear front runner after an analysis. It looks like we will be making some pretty major architectural changes to Eureka. In the TC meeting, there seemed to be hope that this change might be something that can be an effect by Trillium. That would be really cool if they could make that shift. But I guess the waters are still a little choppy with Eureka. I guess was my kind of take away from that. I am a big fan of Apache, and I feel more secure using an Apache product when it comes to long-term open source support for some piece of software. So, and then also, yeah, that brings us to the end of TC update. Jennifer, do you have anything from the RMS?
Well, there was no meeting, and you already said
Oh, yeah.
CSP nine, sorry, eight. No, well, it's different. It's a CSP, but eight has come out,
Okay.
and this it was very technical. So I know there's been fixes to like various logs, and also the refresh token, but definitely check the dashboard for other updates coming soon. In the next meeting, which is next week, we'll be taking a look at the timeline, I believe, for Trillium.
All right. Thank you, folks. Liaisons. I'll do a quick action item review. Just looking over our action items for this meeting, Charlotte was able to complete that proposal. She sent it out. We'll be going over it in a little bit for community calendar calming, which just sounds so peaceful. And I got to knock out a few of my to-dos. One being I have redone these shortcuts over here, so that hopefully will add some convenience to our lives. And then all of us deserve a pat on the back because, as far as I'm aware, all of the working group charters are now in effect across our three working groups. So thanks everyone for getting those made and for looking them over and the feedback that everyone gave. And let's get to work. We're gonna do some updates on active initiatives. Charlotte, do you want to take a moment to go over the calendar calling proposal? Just kind of give
Yeah,
us broad strokes.
maybe you can share. That's all fine.
Sure.
The
Like,
document.
get all this Zoom tooling out of the way. I'd really love to. There we go.
So we talked about this idea about could we how could we do some planning that would not hurt our ongoing work, but free some time up for that each of us who are engaging in SIG work, who are engaging in the councils, who are participating in working groups, etc. We do also have another job, you can say. We are the participants from the libraries. They have a day-to-day work at their local institutions, and if you are working for a vendor, then you have a long list of customers you are also need to provide work for. And yeah, personally, I can see that my work week year after year after year is so chopped up in small pieces because of this being that we have so many meetings. So I have talked a little with colleagues index data, other SIG conveners from the customer side who also are active in the being active members in the folio community. And all agrees that if we could provide some more, concentrate the meetings a little bit and get some work days free for meetings. I, of course, understand that I could myself, I could skip meetings. But it is also then a kind of letting the burden on the other members in, if it's a working group or in a SIG or etc. I have tried up to do this proposal, and maybe we can. So the goal is to free time for other tasks, work at our institutions, project planning. Also, I'd say it has been, I think in 2025, I have seen many meetings being cancelled. And some of them have been cancelled simply because there was no one who were volunteering for preparing anything for the agenda. That's especially for the SIGs. That's a situation. So maybe having a little bit more focused number of meetings could make our meetings more efficient. Yeah. And then I put in this third bullet, and I know it's a little almost vogue to but we are in this for years, and we are, we have to be careful that we are not getting causing that people are being exhausted. I got one idea. There was one idea proposed to me, and that was what about making one workday each week meeting free? But I'd say that I would be a little cautious about, because I know some of the newer SIGs, how difficult it has been for them to find any available meeting slot for this new SIG, because all members were already heavily booked up in these smaller window where it is not late evening for Europeans or very, very early for the Americans. And the Linked Data SIG was one of these SIGs. And so if we decided to have every Monday meeting free, then what about all the SIGs who had meetings on that Monday was suddenly to try to squeeze it in Tuesday to Friday? So in this proposal, I have suggested that we have 12 weeks, the last week of each month, and we could be able to, plan accordingly. So if there is the SIGs are right now starting up all their meeting planning for the next year, so kind of it's timely. We could achieve it if we want to proceed with this proposal. And it's deliberately that I've taken the last week of the month, because then we are already, the quiet weeks, Thanksgiving holiday week, the December holidays, and also 2026, we will even go into the Easter holidays. So it might be, a not so disruptive proposal.
Thank you for preparing this, Charlotte. I think let's do this just because we have a packed meeting today. You've put this out there, you've explained it. We can all kind of sit with it, and then maybe next Thursday we can put it on the agenda to make a decision officially if we as the PC want to adopt this calendar schedule for 2026. And kind of what the implications of that would be. And then If we do end up accepting it, I think we probably should make a little bit of effort to reach out to the other two councils and let them know that we're planning on doing this. Or I mean, we should communicate to the community anyway, make an announcement that we're making this shift. But I think it might be kind of nice to invite the other councils to consider, adopting the same schedule. Caitlin?
I just wanted, oh, sorry, Charlotte, you go first.
So I think we also need to check in with the six.
Oh, yeah.
So, I have suggested next steps, and that would be
Oh.
to talk with the six.
Sorry.
So it's not that I think we should just decide. I think we should, this is because if this is to be efficient, then it's not just the PC meetings or the council meetings. It is, we should try to see if we can get as many aligned around this as possible. And of course, there can be it is not a demand, but it is that we encourage to follow this. So if the TC, feel they need to meet these calm weeks, of course they can do that. Or six, if they have any urgent topic they need to talk about, they could also meet. But the whole idea is getting, if it is just the PC and one sick following it, then it's not giving that calm. It's not calming anything down. Then it's
Sure.
just being up down. Caitlin.
I wanted to say I completely agree with you that we need to find ways to calm the schedule in general because it's getting unwieldy. But I also wanted to point out it might be helpful to come at this from two directions. One, putting a limit on how many meetings that we can have, which is what you've got here. But also, I think that as a community, we tend to be like meeting first in terms of our preferred communication and standing meeting preferred. So like the first thing that we do when we need to solve a problem is we set up a standing meeting. We have Slack, we've got Confluence. We might need to think about ways that we can promote asynchronous cooperation and problem solving. And I don't have a specific proposal, but in addition to this, like we can help SIGs or maybe even model this for SIGs, ways that we can get work done asynchronously in a way that's inclusive of all time zones and also remove some of the standing meetings from calendars. So that's just food for thought for like future conversations. I don't think it should prevent this from going forward, but I think it as we're trying to serve that goal, there's an opportunity to think about how we're doing our work that might benefit everyone.
I like that idea. Yeah, you got my brain turning. I'm wondering, people have probably done this before, but I'm like imagining like an asynchronous meeting, just being like a dump of Slack threads, basically. Like here's the agenda for the asynchronous meeting, and it's just like four, messages in a channel. Introducing the topics for the asynchronous meeting agenda, where the participants of the meeting are just encouraged to, have a threaded conversation on each agenda item. I mean, that seems like it could be a thing.
I think it's really hard and it takes a lot of work, especially I think we all come from a, like cultures, work cultures that are very meeting forward and value that in-person real-time exchange. It's a lot of work for you have to have dedicated people who are in charge of like managing the thread and making sure people are contributing and doing all that. But I think we've gotten there. I mean, like even to Charlotte's point, if we block off days, I feel like people are going to fill up the unblocked days because we have so much work going on around the world on this project. We might need to think about ways that we can do it differently.
Charlotte, and then we need to figure out a next step for this, and we need to move on because we got lots more stuff to cover.
And I skip.
For next steps, I do agree with the sentiment that we need to reach out to the SIGs. Maybe a good way to do that would be to send a message out with this to all the SIG liaisons, and just encourage them to get some feedback from their SIG for this that maybe we could go over in a future agenda item. Does that seem like a good next step for this? Charlotte, would you like to send that message out? All
Sure. Sure.
right, thank you. And I'll be in communication with you, Charlotte, as far as the timing on that. Maybe we could get this topic on an agenda in the future, and then your message could basically just be, "Hey, Six, try to talk about this before this date, and if you have feedback, you can bring it to that PC meeting."
So that's an action item for Charlotte.
Yes, you can put my name on it too. Just 'cause I want to coordinate with her on that and our schedule. Okay. Thank you so much, Charlotte. I hope we can make this happen. Working group check-ins. We don't have to spend a ton of time on this. We've already talked with release management. Autumn, do you have any updates for the better sample data?
Autumn is not here today.
Autumn is not here, so she does not. I'm gonna edit this and change these update dates. So we will check in with Autumn next time. Community directed development framework. We did meet. We have nailed down a set of incremental milestones between this moment and our first deliverable, which is the minimally viable DIP in February. And another thing that I think all of our working group needs to do is come in and edit this document to get our goals from our newly approved charters into this document. So Alexis, that's another action item for me as the convener of this group and any other conveners for these other groups. Let's see, community priorities dashboard. Is that now Caitlin or Alexis?
I think it's still Alexis today, and we're going to have a meeting after
Yeah.
this, and I'm going to help more.
Yeah, we are. So we haven't met. The last time we were scheduled was Thanksgiving, so it's been like a month since we met, but we did go to that PO meeting last week. And we have a lot of notes that we want to that we need to look at to maybe tweak a couple things, either in our charter and or in our plan. But in general, I think we're at the point where I think we're ready to kind of get started and figure out who's going to do what.
Awesome. And Alexis, would you mind, or Caitlin, one of y'all, bringing your goals in from your charter into this document?
Yep, for sure.
Thank you. And Autumn is also not here to report on this, but I'm a part of this group, so I don't mind giving a quick update. We had a great meeting last, no, this week, Tuesday, I think. Yeah, Tuesday we had a good meeting. There has been some impassioned conversations, and I feel like the group is really adopting a good posture about the situation. We're really trying to make sure that we approach this in a way where we're not like wagging our finger at our RMS and saying this is, and really approaching it more from the perspective of, if the PC has some responsibilities in regards to RMS, it's likely that we have not been like living up to those responsibilities, and just making sure that we're kind of addressing things on our side in a healthy way. And just as part of the discussion is also exploring some different approaches or arrangements to re release management that could be explored. So I'm excited to see what's going to come out of this group. So. Thank you, working groups. We'll update this. Okay. So that brings us to our main topic for today. It's fine if this is all we get to for today. The first half of the meeting took up half of the meeting. But I'm going to turn this over to BVB to talk with us about the RFID app and share a little bit about what they've been working on with that. And then maybe we can have some Q&A about it. And I'll stop sharing. Do we have someone from BVB here to talk with us?
It's me.
Awesome.
Like this. I can hear it properly.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. And basically, this is an app or a development we already presented in the implementer SIG, and people seem to be liking what they saw. So I decided to come here today and have a little presentation here as well in front of the PC. So, oops, like this. Why am I here today? Basically, to find out how we can make Folio more RFID friendly, because I think RFID is quite a is a technology that, especially here in Bavaria, a lot of not colleges, we're kind of distinguishing between universities and also kind of colleges or something. And a lot of colleges, they have this kind of technology. And so, but also we in Regensburg, for example, we have it, and we found no native way to include RFID or to satisfy our RFID needs so far. So I kind of stepped in and developed a bit for myself, and I'm gonna show you today what this is about. So we have a little agenda prepared. Basically, I'll show you where we're coming from, what requirements we derived from that legacy, and how we implemented this. Basically, our working with RFID consists of two to three main topics, which is getting the tags online, initializing those, editing those. Then all the circulation stuff happening with patrons being able to borrow items for themselves, and also even fully automated check-in and stuff like that. So we have the self-service and from the counter. And then there's security gates in order for people not to basically things that light up when you cross them with non-checked out items. Today we'll look especially at the initializing and editing and at the counter circulation, because we have solutions with the SIP2 Edge module for self-service and also security gates. Well, it's basically kind of independent. Where do we come from? We used to have CSIS, and the interface looked like this. So this is in German. No problem. You basically had here one a tab which said RFID, and we had something like a full integration. So basically, the software connected directly to the driver, which then spoke to the hardware. So no intermediate steps, just the software and basically the hardware. And you could have delete label data. You could read in. You could write all this kind of stuff integrated well into the surface. And also when circulating, you had little windows where you could see you just put the stuff on and it checks in or out everything that that you would put on, and give you little hints for whatever was not being processed correctly. So this was what our staff was used to. So we definitely wanted to be able to work from the Folio UI. So not to have any visible programs in the background where we just copy paste or macro base anything barcode related, but we wanted to just work from within the UI. We wanted to support different hardware because here in Germany, I don't know how it's in the US or other parts of the world, but we have three main suppliers for libraries who do RFID, which are Bibliotheca, EasyCheck, and Lynxer. So we wanted to be able to support all three of those. And as a bonus, batch processing, which we were used to, and it's nice to have. And so those are the two components we had. And Folio being a browser-based software meant to, we had to find a way in order to have the app that's shown here basically in the with the black icon, have the app communicate with the hardware. And the solution we went for is having like a little program in the background, opening a web server or a port on a web server, which was able to connect to local hardware, but also to answer to requests, HTTP requests from the browser. Biblioteca, for example, offers something like this called Stuff Connect, basically the same concept. And also there's a program from another librarian in Northern Germany who did something like this for Alma as well. And so we developed our own thingy in order to be independent. Right, so let's jump into a little demonstration because that's what we're here for. We have the Folio and basically everything you know. All right, let me quickly set this to English. Because of course I localized this thing. So yeah, we have like the two main applications which are circulation tag editing. For now we can forget about the ILL tag adoption, which is more like I think a maybe German thing, but we can talk about it if you're interested. So circulation, I tried to stay from a design aspect, try to stay kind of close to the check-in and the check-out app. So you have like a patron lookup, and you have the media. So when I take some item and I put it on the pad, I like an item here pops up. I can put more stuff on there. You have kind of a live view of what's on the pad. You have different information being presented. For example, if the item is so to say secured, those are items that are not checked out at the moment, so they should be secured. If they're complete, so on the tags, I've prepared some other one here. On the tags, there is like a tag counter, so to say, for and when one of the tags is missing, so for example, you kind of have a CD and the normal book, the CD is missing, it communicates that here. It is to note that there is no connection to any data from the inventory, because there you could also have things like consist of this and that many parts. So this is a tag only kind of thing, because in Germany also some libraries they use one tag per item. Doesn't matter how much additional content there is. We in Regensburg, we are more generous with the tags, so we decided to just go with the information on the tag. I have a barcode, which is connected to the inventory item, title, call number, and let me see. For example, if I wanna check something out, so this is something you're also used to from the checkout app, like a little overview. Then I just press checkout, and everything seems to have worked. The media are now unsecured, or the security is unlocked. It shows a yellow indica a green indication of this the action being terminated successfully. And yeah, basically I could just have more stuff on there. And if I want to check this one out, I get an error message because someone else has requested this item. And yeah. So ending the session resets this basically. Someone else has borrowed this, so we can maybe I just check it back in again. And there you can see two check-ins were successful, and another one which had the requests. It says it has a new status now, awaiting pickup at this service point. And it's quite easy to just have the print being the slip being printed with this button over here. So this is the circulation part of things. So far, I think everything from practical work with it stuff worked quite well. And yeah, we may now continue, I guess, to the tag editing. Tag editing basically also has you can see what's on the pad at the moment. So this is like the two tags I have. And the relevant information being presented here, which is for us basically the barcode, the part numbers, which then lead to an complete or incomplete, and the easels, so basically the home library of the tag and the item. And so when initializing items, we could just take. Oh, let me see. Just take some other barcode, because normally you'd have an empty tag or empty tags. So, for example, if we put only one here, and yeah, initializing is quite simple. You just put the barcode here, you press right tag, and we have the new tag adopted with all the part numbers. So we have the full auto mode, which basically says you have a number of tags on the pad. It assumes that all these tags form the entirety of the tags required for the barcode. So for example, if I put the second one on there as well, and then it just assigns this barcode to all the tags and numbers them from 1 to X, depending on how many tags it found on the pad. So, for example, now I'd suspect exactly the two tags being kind of part of the, or yeah, being initialized for this item. And you could have like a semi-automatic or a manual mode. Manual mode being you can basically assign all the information by yourself. So if you do it like this, or maybe if you just have one CD and it's part four of or three or four, the only tag. So you have basically have, oops, Did I? Like this. So you have full control. And semi-automatic is more like a legacy kind of thing or a compatibility thing, because our interface that we use, this one, is able to write multiple tags at once, but others might not, which means you have to present them sequentially. So you just put the barcode, and you say it's a total number of parts is two. You write the tag, it and you basically, huh, those one I have to localize. You present tags after tags, and now you basically have the same result there. That's a bit of a what kind of interface are you using? And that's basically it. We can take a short look at the settings, because of course we have the settings as well, which is you basically specify your home easel. So for example, if I which is stored in Folio in some settings, because this is something I think you use tenant wide, which basically gives the default being presented here. Or also, for example, now I switched my easel, and the tags I just wrote still have the other easel, so those are marked for not being processed automatically, because the easel is not the one I you'd expect. You can still overwrite this automatic disabling, but yeah, normally I think you would not want to process any foreign easel or foreign tags anyway, for example, those coming from interlibrary loans or stuff like that. And then you basically have connection properties. So on which port is your local web server running, and which of the is it, we are using a JSON-based web server. So our we respond in JSON, but this other tool from this one, for example, and also the Alma tools, they're using XML based. So you could basically switch between those options as well. Short word for the second part of the solution, which is the little web server in the back. This is a program running on my machine, and basically initializes or connects to the pet via the driver. All our pets, also from these three suppliers that I mentioned, so Bibliotheca, EasyCheck, and Lynxö, they basically use the same hardware manufacturer, which is Feig. And our yeah basic every supported RFID reader can be attached to this connector here, and have a little some settings, of course, where you can specify, for example, the port where it's running, and then some more kind of stuff. You could also attach your readers via network. You have different ways to communicate if a medium or an item is secured or unsecured, which are some bit pairs, so to say, which signify the secure or unsecured status, and then some more, just not that important at the moment, but yeah. Are there any questions so far?
We have a question in chat from Charlotte. She asked if the RFID tag is being added to the item record.
No. So we do not Folio does not know that any RFID happened so far. But that's, I think, also that may be a good idea to say so, or to have like a item note or something like that. But so far, it did not really. No one had the idea, so nothing in that direction happened. The connection to the connection to the RFID pad is via the network and not USB connected to the computer running the browser.
I think,
So,
yeah, go for, yeah, go for it.
my pad is connected via USB, and but there are readers which can be connected via network, but those still cannot. They've primarily connect to the RFID or the driver, and from then on out, I think you can't just access or talk with the driver via the browser. So this intermediary step with the local web server is kind of necessary, I feel.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I first of all, great job. I mean, this is a super slick implementation. It's clear that you guys really nailed it. I think it introduces a lot of really interesting design patterns that, as far as I know, this is the first time that any sort of native client running on the machine, user's machine, has been used to integrate hardware with Folio. Is anybody else aware of that technique being used in other circumstances? It's a really cool idea, and it makes me think that, like we have edge modules and things like that. It makes me think that Folio could maybe benefit from standardizing that approach, like client connectors or something like that. So I don't know. I think it's a really cool approach to the problem.
Yeah, my ears perked up at that as well.
Yeah. So I don't want to get too far into the technical weeds here, but so this module that I'm looking at right now is making local host calls to the client.
Exactly. So in order to have it live as you see it, it basically
It's
sends a
like
GET request every
holding.
second.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. We here at A&M have implemented lots of things like this that kind of sit beside Folio to kind of soft integrations, just for expediency sake and just to kind of get the functionality up off the ground that we want to see used. Did you guys discuss at all what it would be like to integrate RFID functionality into the existing check-in or check-out applications?
So we shied away from that, doing this just on our own, because getting something into the Folio core is quite hard, and RFID is a whole kind of complex. And I think you'd have to touch not just the check-in and check-out app, but maybe also the inventory. And but it would be really cool to see some development going into this direction. And I think a first step could be having something like an interface or an integratable hook. So it's one of those React hooks. I don't know if you, which you can just import into any app and access sort of pet data from there. I mean, there is, let me see. This when specifying the needed interface, we kind of leaned on Alma, because I think when stuff is developed for Alma and Folio can profit from it, it's perfect, just the way we wanted it. And they kind of have this documentation, this interface documentation for exactly this get items. Then you have the set security to secure, and item update. So they do it in XML. We prefer JSON, but this is the foundation which we relied on for the first kind of shot. And having something like a hook, being able to access or send those requests, I think would be the first step to take also in order to enable other Folio apps to just for RFID.
The tags, are you writing the data to the actual physical tag and then pulling it back off of there? Okay, so there is no like alternate data store lookup happening for any information.
Exactly. So basically when I put something on the oops on the pad in the background, it does like a little items check, but in order to resolve the barcode into a title on the call number. But
Okay.
apart from that, everything's on the just on the tag,
Okay, so
which
you're not storing the title and the call number on the tag. You are getting that live from
Yeah,
Folio. Okay.
exactly. So the only thing that's on the tag, get me one of those, or which comes from our interface is basically the barcode. And then the interface also evaluates if it's complete, because sometimes it's a bit of a tricky thing. And for example, zeros here can mean that there is an unspecified number coming from our legacy system. And so, yeah, we evaluate if something is complete and if the whole bunch is secured, which then lead to basically this sign and the check. By the way, you can also always press this one in order to manually lock and unlock kind
So
of
you could
stuff.
do it item by item instead of all of them at one time.
Exactly. Normally, if you would check it in, it does it automatically as well as when you check out. So when you check it in, it should quickly jump to this one, because it being in the library, it should better be secured. No one being responsible for it. But yeah, this is the information that's on the tag, and so far everything we needed. It follows a convention called the Danish data model. And yeah, we adhered to it back in the old system and continue to do so.
Well, I really appreciate y'all's time working on this and your time here today presenting on it. Are there any final questions from anybody? Charlotte?
I have a super quick question, and that is your page here, is that interacting with the all the different pop-up modals and notifications, etc., for built-in in the regular check-in, check-out?
So we have this plugin, the user look patron lookup plugin. We do kind of, or I took great inspiration in some of the, oops, hold on. Let me
So I'm
check.
thinking about in transit pop-up message and awaiting pickup messages
I
and
mean, there is the this one, which the staff slip, which is pulled, of course, from the configurations or from the settings. Apart from that, I tried to limit myself to as few interactions as possible, because whenever something changes, I have to think of those changes as well. And so being as standalone as possible was kind of the way to go.
Okay.
We're pretty much at time. I would like to talk about, from the product council's perspective, next steps when it comes to this. I think it's really clear that you guys have implemented something of a really good quality here, and I'm sure there are institutions that would be interested in using it. So, product council would, I think it would be good for us to maybe have a little bit of discussion around this. Both specifically this implementation, but then also just kind of in general, the next topic on our agenda was, do we have a good way of kind of surfacing and communicating that tools exist that can integrate with Folio without necessarily tying them to the flower release? Or is this something that we feel like there's sufficient interest around the community that maybe a push should be made to see what it would be like to have this more firmly integrated into Folio and part of a flower release, or things of that nature? So would that does anyone concur that that would be a good conversation for us to have? I see some nodding. Okay, so we'll try to get that on the agenda. And Felix, if we do, when we do get this on the agenda, I'll send you a message and let you know in case it's a conversation you want to participate in.
Of course, I'd love to. Also, just thanks again for the attention and also and basically ways to or finding ways to integrate RFID more into Folio, I think would be a cool thing, because I think a lot of libraries are using it and kind of try to find their own ways about it. But yeah, being able to offer it would be nice.
Absolutely. All right, folks. Well, thanks everyone, and hope the rest of y'all's days are great. Take it easy.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.